Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. A great American music mecca plays a starring role in the new album called Memphis, Circa 3 AM. It's by singer-songwriter John Paul Keith, an adopted son of Memphis. He's joined me here in the Soundcheck studio with his band today. And speaking of starring roles, one of John Paul Keith's songs has a big part in a new independent film set in the world of underground rock in 1986. We'll hear more about that album and that movie in a moment. But first, let's hear John Paul Keith and his band live in the studio with You Really Oughta Be With Me.
One, two, three, four. I sure would like to see your face. Close to mine in a dim little place. Conscience and my schedule's clear.
That is John Paul Keith live on Soundcheck with his song You Really Oughta Be With Me. You heard John Paul singing and playing the guitar with John Argroves behind our drum kit here in the Soundcheck studio and James Godwin playing the bass. That's the lead-off track on John Paul's latest record called Memphis Circa 3 AM, which is out now. And John Paul, first of all, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
What is going on in Memphis around 3 a.m., other than FedEx packages being delivered and shipped out?
Well, that's about the closing time in Tennessee. That's when they shut the bars down. But and being a musician, you know, I see a lot of that. You know, see a lot of bars at 3 a.m. closing out, and it's kind of a particular vibe I think we've all been through at a time or two in our life, and that just sort of played into the writing of the record. You know, I was spending a lot of time in that mindset, so that's sort of where that came from.
If people have not been to Memphis, you know, it's famous for Beale Street,
right?
You know, the great music scene there. I know when I went to Memphis, I was stunned at how tiny Beale Street is.
Yes.
I mean, it's literally like a couple of blocks
long. A couple
of
blocks, yeah.
And that's it.
Yep.
And
And yet that couple of blocks is enough, it seems.
Yeah, it was, especially back in the day, it was very, very important, you know, back in the segregation days. That was the place for African Americans to go for entertainment and drinking, you know, was on Beale. And that's, you know, B.B. King and mm-hmm. Rufus Thomas and Albert King and all those guys came out of that world, you know. But and also in West Memphis, there was what it was curfew in Memphis at the time, but in West Memphis, Arkansas, across the river, another state, there was no curfew. So that's a lot of the Memphis sound came from that too.
Oh, okay. So how much it sounds like the city of Memphis has really sort of played a big kind of starring role, as I said earlier, in this new record.
Yeah, yeah. Part of that was. The way we recorded it, we recorded at Sam Phillips Recording Service, which is the studio that Sam Phillips of Sun Records built when he sold Sun in 1960. Sun was just in a little radiator shop. It was tiny. It was always makeshift. Mm-hmm. But Sam Phillips Studio, Sam Phillips Recording, was built to be a studio, and it was state-of-the-art at the time. And it's still in business, and the man who produced the record had been there since 1983.
That's Roland James.
Roland James, who unfortunately passed away earlier this week, so at the age of 80. So we were very saddened to hear that. We were on the road and missed the funeral and everything. So I hated to hear that. We loved mm-hmm. Roland, and it was the most rewarding recording experience of my life, and I think for the other guys as well.
Now he was associated with Sun Records.
He was for a while, going way back in the 50s. He was sort of a house guitarist there, and he played guitar on all of the Jerry Lee Lewis recordings at Sun. Maybe 150 plus recordings with Jerry Lee there, including Great Balls of Fire and a whole lot of shaking going on. You've heard Roland James play guitar your whole life, trust me. You just didn't know it, you know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
He was on all the Billy Lee Riley stuff, and then. Then later on, he moved to he left Sun, started his own label, Rita Records, for a minute. They put out the first version of Mountain of Love, the Johnny Rivers hit. It was a hit first for a local guy, Harold Dorman, and Roland produced that, and then Johnny Rivers heard that record and covered it. So
this guy is like woven into the history
of Memphis. Absolutely.
So your record must have been one of the last things he did.
As far as we know, I think it was the last commercial release. I know he was doing sessions right up to the end, but I think our record was the last commercially released album that he did. And I'm quite certain we did the last 45 single he ever put out, you know, that he ever worked on, because we have a new single out as well that he produced. So,
so people are releasing 45-inch vinyl now? Is that coming back?
Oh, it's been back.
I mean, I know vinyl is back, but the
we do the 7-inch. Yeah,
it's, you do the singles?
We have two actually. They do a little better for us in Europe than they do here. But they're fun. You know, if you have a jukebox in your house, we can hook you up.
I don't happen to have a jukebox in my New York City house. we're speaking with John Paul Keith, and the album we're talking about is called Memphis, circa 3 a.m. You were not always, you're not a Memphis boy. You're not
no,
a native.
No,
you've,
no.
You've gone all over, haven't you?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Knoxville, Tennessee. And by the way, I need to give a shout out to my dad in Knoxville. Yesterday was his birthday, and I almost forgot. So happy belated birthday, Dad. I'm sure he's at home listening. But I grew up in Knoxville, and was in Nashville for about 5 years in the late 90s. I did the whole Nashville thing, was in a few bands there and with varying degrees of success, if you want to call it that. And then kind of got burnt out on that, came here for a little bit in 2002. I was in New York for about 6 months, but I just couldn't make ends meet. It was just too much, you know, like mm-hmm. it is for a lot of people, especially musicians. So found myself in Alabama for a couple of years, and then my sister lived in Memphis and had been for years. She worked there, and she said, "Why don't you go to Memphis and give it a shot for a while?" And I was kind of burnt out and had no intention of playing. And when I got there, of course, it being Memphis and music is just everywhere. It just next thing you knew, I was playing again. And
Had you actually walked away from music for a while?
I had. I'd kind of hit the wall with trying to be in a band and put out records and push yourself and do the whole thing. I just got burnt, you know, just burned out with it, and decided I was just going to try something else. And it didn't last long, especially in Memphis. Memphis totally recharged my batteries very quickly.
So Nashville and Memphis, they share a state.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing the sound is pretty different. I mean, when you were in Nashville, that was sort of more alt-country kind of stuff.
Well, in the late 90s, Nashville was still just straight-up mainstream country. I mean, there was an underground there, and there kind of always has been. But But there was a rock scene, but it didn't get the attention or have the kind of respect that it has now. Nashville's completely different now.
It's
really changed a lot. We were just there last week, and it's really stunning how much the city's grown and how much it's changed. There was no East Nashville scene or any of that stuff when I lived there. But that said, Memphis has always sort of been, you know, the best description. I don't know who said this. I heard somebody say this one time. You know, Nashville is Metropolis and Memphis is Gotham. You know, Memphis is a little dirtier and rougher and funkier, but in a lot of ways more soulful. It's smaller. The scene is much smaller, but it's not for everybody. But for me, for whatever reason, it just lined up all the great musicians there, and it's just been perfect for me.
Well, and this album, Memphis Circa 3 A.M. I mean, it has a kind of classic, gut bucket kind of roots rock. Rock and roll sound to it.
That's Memphis, and that's also a big part of that was Roland. I mean, the way we recorded it was 100% analog, 2-inch tape. Roland had no computer in the building, didn't know how to use one, didn't care to learn. You know, he was 79 years old when we started the record.
Right.
So it was recorded the way records used to be recorded.
Yeah, and again, that's Roland Jaynes, who recently passed away, the rockabilly guitarist and producer of John Paul Keith's record, Memphis Circa 3 A.M., You want to do Anyone Can Do It for us next?
Sure, let's do that.
All right. Once again, John Argroves is playing the drums, James Godwin on bass, John Paul Keith will strap on the guitar. They're playing for us live in the Soundcheck studio. This song is called Anyone Can Do It. Once again, John Paul Keith and his band live on Soundcheck, and that song's called Anyone Can Do It, an original song from John Paul that is featured in a new movie called Losers Take All, which is about a young underground band trying to make it in the 1980s. In a moment, we'll hear more about that movie and John Paul's role in it, sort of behind the scenes, and we'll talk with the film's director. That is coming up. Stay where you are. This is Soundcheck.
That's a song, man. should be us.
That'll never be us.
Oh, come on, why not?
First of all, bad brains are black. Second of all, we can't keep a band together.
Dude, relax. We'll find a new drummer.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and that is a scene from the new movie Losers Take All. It's a comedy set in the world of underground rock circa 1986, and the two characters you just heard there, Brian and Dave, played by Kyle Gallner and Aaron Himmelstein, eventually do put together a band called The Fingers that proves, what a surprise, to be somewhat hapless. A moment ago, we heard our in-studio guest musician John Paul Keith playing the theme song from Losers Take All, and now we're joined as well by the director, Alex Steiermark. Alex, good to have you back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
So this is basically, do you know the book Our Band Could Be Your Life by Michael Azarad?
Yes.
You have done like the comedy version of that book, you know, the underground scene of the 1980s.
That's a compliment. A lot of credit is due to Wynn Kozlik and Andrew Pope, who are the screenwriters, and all three of us, I guess, had our musical coming of age during that era. So for us, it's these were our favorite bands, and
Bands like Bad Brains, who we heard in the background.
Bad Brains
there,
that you just heard, and The Minutemen, and Husker Du, and and there's a whole great.
So it's the beginnings of what would become later indie rock.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. In fact, I would say that a lot of what is happening today was heavily influenced by that music.
Absolutely. Now, you use John Paul's song that he just played for us a moment ago, Anyone Can Do It. You use that like three times in the course of this movie.
We do. It sort of evolves. It has evolved into the theme song for the movie. You first see the band laying it down in their first chance. Oh, actually, you see them do it live. And you see them do it in their first shot at working in a big recording studio, and then ultimately the song is played over the end credits.
Well, you can be a hero, not a rock and roll hero. Well, you don't need a hit song if you don't want to live long.
Now, John Paul, you didn't write this song for the movie, right? This is on one of your earlier records.
No, actually, I did write it for the movie.
Really?
But I liked it so much I wanted to put it on my record, so I asked the screenwriters if they minded. So Andrew and Wynn, they were really cool about it. But yeah, I had been hired to just play guitar on the recording sessions for the music that the band would be seen playing, and they had already solicited songs from various different people. So we had 2 days of recording, and the first day, because that's how we do it in Memphis, we do it fast. The first day of recording, I realized that one of the songs was written by my good friend Jack Oblivion, who's a Memphis songwriter from the Oblivions, 90s sort of garage rock kingpin guy, and a great friend. And I said, oh, Jack's got a song, huh? And then my friend Ari Sertoval also had a song in it. And I was like, my friends all have songs in it, and I don't. So I went home that night after the first day and said, I got to come up with something for this. So I just through sheer force of will, it came out, you know, and the version you hear in the movie is more of a Ramones-y kind of version than what we do. But I came back the next day and pitched it to the team, and they went for it. So
and the idea Anyone Can Do It, I mean, that's sort of that DIY ethos, Alex. That's part and parcel of this whole scene you're documenting.
That's right. I mean, that's basically the theme of the movie. You know, Brian and Dave, Kyle and Aaron say at the beginning of the movie, we need to start a band.
Right.
And that, I think, you know, that ethos is what informs it. And it also, I mean, that's a timeless sort of philosophy now, you know.
It's timeless, but the movie is definitely rooted in its time period, the mid-1980s.
Yep.
And you've got, I mean, the soundtrack is extraordinary. I mean, bands that I don't think I've ever heard, licensed for film use before.
I think you're right. I think it's the first movie that all of these guys are in the same movie. That's for sure.
We've put together just a little, kind of series, a little collage of clips of some of the music from this new film called Losers Take All.
Some say my manners ain't the best. Some of my friends have been in a whole lot of trouble. And some say
guys don't wear white.
So those are just three of the bands that appear in the soundtrack of the film Losers Take All. Minor Threat with Good Guys Don't Wear White, Husker Du with Games, and then Dinosaur Jr. with Little Fury Things. Alex Steiermark, director of the film, was it hard to, I mean, Minor Threat, for one, fiercely independent band, were they at all reluctant to let you use their music?
Well, I gotta say, it was an honor and a compliment that all these bands, most of them had to see the scenes that their music was being used in before they would approve it. And so we had to prepare clips of all these things and send them out. And you know, it came back. They wanted to be involved. And that was a dream, because this was a wish list of tunes. And we got the ones that we wanted.
And the Minutemen and Black Flag and Guided by Voices and the Descendants and Alex Chilton, and you know, it really is a kind of time capsule of the great alternative rock bands of that time period. And now, against that backdrop, your hapless band, the Fingers, are trying to make their way, and mm-hmm. and this kind of sets up the. You know, the comedic sensibility of the new movie, which, by the way, is available this weekend for on-demand viewing at outlets like iTunes and Hulu and various cable systems. Marshall Crenshaw is listed pretty prominently in the credits. Mm-hmm. What was his role?
Marshall is the executive music producer of the original songs that were done for the movie. He worked with Scott Bomar, who from Memphis, who has a band, the Bo Keys,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they recorded at Scott's studio, Electrophonic, and Marshall worked with Scott and the musicians and worked on the arrangements and sang the vocals on the original demo versions and worked with the actors on their singing techniques.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And John Paul, you worked with the actors on their sort of bandness.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't sure how to finish that sentence. So.
Yeah, I booked them a gig and ripped them off, so they would really get the feel for how to be a musician. No, I coached the actors on miming the guitar, mm-hmm. playing and stuff, and the guy that played drums on the sessions, Paul Bucagnani, another Memphis musician, he coached the actor playing the drummer, and they were great. Those actors worked so hard. And they were so talented. Some of them had a little bit of a music background anyway, but they went through boot camp for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Every day we were rehearsing it and rehearsing them miming it. But by the end of the rehearsals, they could play one of the songs all the way through, uh-huh. as a band. So when we had the launch party, they got up and played
oh, nice.
The song. So before we ever started shooting, so it was nice.
Mm-hmm. John Paul Keith is with us, the singer-songwriter who's playing with his band in the studio today, and we're sort of taking a break from the live music to talk with him and with director Alex Steiermark about this movie called Losers Take All, a musical comedy set in the sort of budding world of indie rock back in 1986. In this scene, the band's manager, Greg, played by Adam Hirschman, is explaining to the band, the Fingers, that he's drawn up a list of people that he has wronged, because, Alex, he's just gotten out of rehab, right?
Yeah, he went through a little bit of a downward spiral at a certain point, and then now he's gotten his life back together. He wants to make amends.
And so his 12-step program includes the step where you do just that. You make amends to a list of people you've wronged. And the list of people that he has wronged includes Paul Westerberg of The Replacements, whom the manager simply calls up to apologize for a recent mishap.
He was like, oh, I know that record, The Fingers. It ain't half bad.
Shut up. You're lying.
And he seemed to actually like the fact that you missed the show because you and Brian had snorted mushrooms.
You don't snort mushrooms, Greg.
You're darn right I don't.
I can't believe that Paul Westerberg knows a record.
Not only that, he said he tried to cover a squirt gun once, but it went horribly wrong. I think they might have some alcohol problems.
And of course, the one of many in-jokes for folks who were fans of these bands, The Replacements, notoriously heavy drinkers.
Yeah, so it's said, yeah.
So Squirt Gun is one of the songs by The Fingers. So now, who wrote The Fingers songs? Was that Scott?
No, they were all different people. John Paul wrote one. John Crenshaw, Marshall's brother, wrote one. Ari Sertival wrote one. Jack Oblivion wrote one.
Okay.
Grant Hart submitted one, didn't he?
Grant Hart submitted
that
one.
Is that one in the film?
That's not in the film.
Not in
The screenwriters actually wrote one. Wayne and Andrew wrote a send-up of a prog rock song called Whale of Victory.
Now, do you guys see something of yourselves in these characters? What about you, John Paul, as a veteran, well-traveled musician?
Yeah, I have trouble remembering that age, but yeah. No, I do see myself. Any musician, I think, couldn't help but see themselves in the little band squabbles and the manager mishaps and all that. I mean, every musician who's ever tried to put out a record and do tours has been through that. So, yeah, it was very well written and lovingly written. You could tell that Andrew and Wynn really loved this subject, and really felt for the characters. So that really comes across in from the scenes that I was around for.
And Alex, for you, the last time you were on Soundcheck was with the 78 Project, where you record contemporary, recorded, I think it was Justin Townes Earle,
right here in our
studio,
mm-hmm.
on an old 78 RPM player recorder.
Yeah.
So you do tend to look back, it seems. What was it about this period, the alternate / underground rock scene of the 80s that appealed to you?
I mean, for me, it was that's when I really first discovered music that I truly loved and felt like that was mine, that spoke to me, that was being done by people that, were close enough in age. I felt like they were speaking to me, and I think everybody goes through that. And for me, it was those bands. I probably saw 95% of those bands live, so...
So a little Valentine to
it's those. A total Valentine. When I read the screenplay, when they approached me about doing the film, and I saw a lot of the songs that you hear in the soundtrack are referenced in the screenplay, I was like, these guys know what they're talking about, and they're talking right to me, and I want to be involved with this movie. So it was great.
The movie is called Losers Take All, and it is available for on-demand viewing beginning this weekend at iTunes and Hulu and cable systems. Alex Steiermark is the director of the film. Alex, great to see you again. Thank you
so
much.
Thanks for having us back.
And John Paul Keith, the singer-songwriter who's here in the studio with his band, wrote what turned out to be the theme song for the film. He played it for us earlier, but he's not quite done. Here's John Paul Keith and his band with another live performance here in the Soundcheck studio. This song is called Everything's Different Now.
Different now. It wasn't
Everything's Different Now, a live performance on Soundcheck from John Paul Keith and his band, with John Paul singing and playing guitar, John R. Groves behind the drums doing some backing vocals, James Godwin on bass. The latest album is called Memphis, circa 3 a.m., and again, you'll hear some of John Paul's music in the new film Anyone Can Do It is the song, yeah, in the film Losers Take All. The bands that we've been talking about, the Husker Du's, the Replacements, you know, the Guided by Voices of the world, were they? It seems like that's a little bit different from the kind of music you play. Were you fans of the?
Some of that I was, and I was certainly aware of it. I was a little bit young for when that stuff was. You know, I was 11 years old in '86, which is when the movie is set. So, I was a little young. And I was into a lot of the hair bands that those bands tried to destroy also. But when you're a kid, you could go through a phase, and 6 months you're into something else. So I definitely went through that period, and I'm very familiar with a lot of that music.
You know, there's a moment early in the film where there's a guitarist on stage who, like, you know, breaks format and does this screaming guitar solo. Is that you actually playing, you know, was that guitarist on screen doing that, or was that you, like, dubbing that in?
I think that was my friend Steve Selvage, I think, if I remember correctly. Okay. If it's shredding, it's probably Steve. Steve also played guitar on the sessions. He's now in the Hold Steady, so he's a little busy with that. But okay. He's a Memphis guy and a good friend. So I think that was Steve. I'm going to give him the credit on that.
All right. The album, though, all the credit for that goes to John Paul Keith. Well, some of it has to go to the late Roland James,
yes,
the producer who died this week. The album is out, Memphis, circa 3 a.m. John Paul, for you and the band to come in here and play live for us today has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We've had a blast. I appreciate it very much.
I only know.